हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so then Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 5, the supremacy of bhakti as the ultimate path. So then on page 41, then okay, O Lord of auspiciousness for the whole world, this personal form is for the benefit of the world, and it was shown to me, your worshipper, by meditation. Therefore, I offer respects to that personal form. Let me only serve you, who are not respected by those who will go to hell, proclaiming that your personal form is false. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.4. Yeah, so this personal form, so that person, see, the personal form is the form that means it's about actual devotion with faith. The platform of Brahman and Paramatma, then there's some work, there's worship, but there's not necessarily that it requires faith in the personal form as an eternal feature that we, as an eternal living entity, individual, then in that devotion, express that love. You know, with the personal Lord. The other two features, because they can be practiced on the material platform, then they only have as much as the material nature allows them to appreciate, which is, you know, all pervading, you know, eternal knowledge, you know, complete knowledge, that aspect. That's as far as they can on the material platform appreciate. So even though they're worshiping the personal form of the Lord, it's generally thought that it's just easier than worshiping nothing, right? Because there's no such thing as a void. But at the same time, as if they were really thoughtful, then they think, but there's no such thing as just, you know, the all-pervading expansion of things, and that's all. The why, then, there's all this manifestation of everything. So it's not a scientific viewpoint, because there isn't anything to confirm that. And you could say, oh yes, but the spiritual world's opposite of the material. Yes, but that opposite means it's eternal, not temporary. It's full of knowledge, not ignorance. It's full of bliss, not misery. That's the difference, you know. And so those aspects that are there, so that doesn't mean that opposite means no form, no emotions, no personality, no individuality, and only of those kind of things. This is just their speculative element, because the highest they can go on the mundane platform of knowledge of the spiritual is just that it's eternal, all-pervading, and there's some feature of knowledge. That's as far as they can get. They can't go more. So naturally, if they think, oh, the spiritual is opposite of this, they'll think it in that context. So it's not. So the point is because he's seen the personal form of the Lord, then he wants to worship him in devotion. And the point being here is that, you know, those who are not respected by those will go to hell, right? Proclaiming your personal form is false, because for them on the material platform, they can't know. It's only by devotion you can know. So it's not by greater knowledge and this and that. It's not like I've done my PhD, so now if I study, you know, Prabhupada's books, I'll see so much more and so much deeper because I have a higher degree of knowledge now. No, you'll understand nothing. That won't give you any ability like that. So it doesn't work. Then the Acharya continues, therefore it is taught. Therefore, O Uddhava, knowing your Atma through jnana, endowed with knowledge and realization, worship me with devotion. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.5. So since we are on that platform where we don't know the Lord, but we know the devotees of the Lord, and they know the Lord, so they've said, But for us, it'll be either just the platform of, clearing of doubt like that, or maybe it gets something to some understanding, because then there's some appreciation, but it hasn't necessarily come to the point of realization, avijnana. So therefore, then it's through knowing your Atma, through jnana, endowed with knowledge and realization, then you move forward. So knowing through jnana, okay, so that means you've heard and cleared doubts. Endowed with knowledge, that means then you've practiced it and applied it and analyzed it, and refined it. And realization, then vijnana, the nididhyasana, then worship with devotion. So all these features of knowledge, then it has to be, have its root, it means its culmination in devotion. Well, devotion already includes knowledge. For the path of jnana, its goal, its ultimate position is bhakti, or the path of karma, its ultimate position is bhakti or yoga. But bhakti already includes the other three. This means that bhakti must be performed by all people, no matter what sadhana they practice. The devatas spoke thus to the Lord. Right? So it doesn't matter what background they are, whatever it is, they're following any of the Vedic paths. But the point is they must serve in devotion the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and see that context of what they're worshiping in that light. Because all the Vedic literatures, all they're explaining is how to worship, how our relationship with the Lord, that eternal relationship based on that personal relationship based on devotion. That's all they're explaining. So even if you're worshiping Kali, you have to see is that she's simply a servant of the Lord. And so then that worship you'll see it in that context. And naturally, if you see it in that context, then the emphasis on the worship of Kali will be reduced, and then you'll worship Krishna, and then she'll simply be an assistant, a servant, or an associate, an assistant of the Lord. And then her natural position is Yoga Maya, so then you'll just switch over to that, and then you'll continue. So then you haven't given up your position as a Shakta, you've just, you become a devotee of the internal potency Shakti rather than the external. So it doesn't change like that. In the beginning, it may be like that, but you still have to see that. That will then bring you to the actual position. So it's the path that all people, whatever they're taking, can appreciate and move forward in bhakti. Riti, the next two anuchetas emphasize that worship of the Lord is not given up, even in a liberated state. It signifies that bhakti is the abhideya, since it must always be performed. Okay. Anucheta 112. So just like we saw before, the bhakti is not given up, and the pancharatric systems about worshiping the Lord in bhakti, it's also not given up. Right? But that'll be your practice that the religious practice that's there. So also on the philosophical understanding, it's not to be given up either, right? Because a liberated state means then you're looking at it from the position and relationships. So on that, it's not given up either. Anucheta 112. After having been purified of all influence of karma by prema, bhakti continues. Right? So this means even after you come to the platform of prema, it's still the abhideya. So that's the whole point, is that when you get the goal, it comes back to Prajumna. As Prabhupada was pointed out, I think it's either first or second canto, that you get a goal, and then that goal comes back to Prajumna. It goes to Aniruddha as the goal. You attain that, then that comes back as part of now the Abhideya of Prajumna again. Right? And that principle there, and the relationship and all that maintains, Sankarshana. So that we're the Jiva, we're the infinitesimal part of Krishna. He's the Supreme Lord. We're his parts and parcels. We have a natural relationship through affection, and we have a particular kind of affection that remains. It doesn't change because it's daibhava. It doesn't change. You know, the other elements of bhava, then they have their flavors, you know, that taste, you know, melding together and all that. And so you get all kinds of amazing taste. But the Abhideya is always the process. It always goes on. So with that knowledge, trying to please Krishna, it goes on. So anything you attain, a higher level of depth of devotion or some facility or an understanding or anything, it comes back to still being part of the Abhideya and continues. Right. So therefore, then always as the that element, that Vasudeva element of always being engaged in the Lord's service, it never stops. Then from Srimad Bhagavatam, just as gold, when smelted in fire, gives up its impurities and attains its pure state. Similarly, the Atma becomes purified of all contaminations, called contamination caused by impressions of karma by bhakti yoga. And then serves me directly. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14-25. So just when you smelt gold in fire, it still remains as gold, but now it's pure gold, right? All the impurities are gone. So the same way as when the Atma becomes purified of contamination, that doesn't mean that there's no Atma or there's no senses or mind or intelligence or form or anything. It's just now in its pure state, right? Caused by impressions of karma by bhakti yoga. So bhakti yoga will remove all those impressions. What we see is that in the jnana, even they attain liberation, that the impressions have been burnt up, but they technically don't go away. So they become resurrected from the ashes when one gets bored, so one wants to do something. So then one again goes and rummages around, you know, in the dustbin of karmic impressions, to find one that gives you some, you know, satisfaction or some pleasure thinking about it on that liberated state. And as soon as you get to that point, then you've identified what's important to you on the material platform, what gives you some satisfaction or shelter like that. And so then Lord Shiva then puts you back into the one of the universes, you know, accordingly, so that you get that particular position. But in bhakti, it removes these contaminants that are caused by the impressions, and they're gone like that. So that's the whole point. When you come to the platform of prema, there is no more impressions. The jiva, purifying himself of the stock of karmas by prema, and then attaining a pure swarup, worships me, it is said. Mukta api lilaya vigraham kritva bhagavantam bhajante. The liberated person, making a deity form endowed with beauty, worships the Lord. Sridhar Swami, quoting Sarvagya Muni. Okay, quoting Sarvagya Muni. The Lord spoke thus. Right, so that means this coming to prema, you don't give up the worship of the Lord as Abhideya. And then if we're on the platform of, you know, in sadhana, then naturally then the worship of the deity doesn't change. And even they come to the platform of prema, that remains. The six Goswamis are on that platform. And so then they're worshiping the deity, you know, even when they go through the pastimes, they're going from just a, you know, some Brahmins and like that up to being, you know, some very, you know, being the Lord's devotees and all that. They never give up that position. Anucheda 1.1.3. Thus it is said in Skanda Purana, Revakanda. A dog eater who satisfies you, O Keshava, becomes Indra, Shiva, and Brahma, and attains the Lord. If Brahma and others are averse to you, they become lower than the dog eater, right? Because the dog eater isn't the lower. You could say it is the signifying or the representative of all the different, like 15 different kinds of those outside the Varnashram system, the fallen or impure groups. Then the Chandala, then he represents them all, you know. By saying that, you understand that it's low enough that it gives a good understanding, but high enough that it's, you know, that it can be respected by others, you know. So he's not the lowest. So there's lower than Chandala. So that's the thing. But of the two is that you have the, you know, Brahmin with a Shudra wife, you get a Nishada, but then you have a Shudra with a Brahmin wife, you get a Chandala. So now of the two, now the Chandala is going to be lower because it is the Analoma. So that way the Analoma, it's against what should be done and all that. And they have a tendency is that they go for Shudra stuff. They like to use the Brahminical activities and field for Shudra stuff. So that's worse than the Nishada, who tends to use Shudra stuff for Brahminical activities. He uses it the other way around. You know, in other words, the spirit is Brahminical, though the field is that of Shudra. But the other, the spirit is the Shudra, but the field is Brahminical. So it properly represents the low grade. So the point is the dog eater, he becomes a devotee, satisfies the Lord. He can become Indra, Shiva, Brahma. He can attain the Lord, all those positions. But if Brahma and others, you know, Indra and like that, are adverse to Krishna like that, you know, we know Shiva won't be, but if they're averse to Krishna, the Indra and Brahma and any of the other great personalities, the position they'll attain is even worse than the Chandala, right? Then a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam, one should meditate continually upon the Lord's lotus feet, from which the Ganga flows and gives extra blessings to Lord Shiva on his head, and whose thunderbolt is released upon mountains of sin in the meditator's mind. Yeah, so then by meditating the Lord's lotus feet, then we see is that all this sin in the meditator's mind, by remembering the Lord, goes away. Udriki, Srila Prabhupada. Another, the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-22. Srila Prabhupada. Another significant point of this verse is that the mind of the conditioned soul, on account of its association with the material energy from time immemorial, contains heaps of dirt in the form of desires to lord it over material nature. This dirt is like a mountain. But a mountain can be shattered when hit by a thunderbolt. Meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord acts like a thunderbolt on the mountain of dirt in the mind of the yogi. The yogi wants to shatter the mountain of dirt in his mind. He should concentrate on the lotus feet of the Lord and not imagine something void or impersonal. Because the dirt has accumulated like a solid mountain, one must meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for quite a long time, right? So it means it's become quite solid. It means that you have whatever is this dirt, but it's like compressed together that it becomes a mountain. One, it's going to be very big, meaning it's accumulated like a solid mountain. One, you just put a lot of it together, then, you know, it makes a big heap. It's, you could say, a mountain of dirt. But when it becomes compacted, it becomes solid because of, you know, that conviction of commitment to a material desire, and that therefore then those impressions become so solid, then it's like a solid mountain. So then, because the other mountain, you know, can come along, just move your hand and stuff will fall off, but this is, no, it's solid like rock. And then when that's hit by the thunderbolt, that can split the mountain, right? For one who is accustomed to thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord constantly, however, it is a different matter. The devotees are so fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord that they do not think of anything else. Those who practice the yoga system must meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time after following the regulator principles and thereby controlling the senses. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-22 purport, right? Those practice yoga must meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time after following the regulative principles and thereby control the senses. So, I mean, they're following the regulative principles. They're doing that for a long time. And we see it comes to the point where the senses are able to be controlled and everything like that. Then you know that you're starting to see the result. One is that you have the faith to take up the regulative principles, meditate upon the Lord, you know, from association of the devotees. And you do that for a long time. So then anartha nivritti, the senses become controlled. So then one becomes steady. And then from there, very quickly, things move forward. The meaning is clear. Thus, bhakti is the abhideya, since it must always be performed, right? So one's always meditating on the Lord, right? The individual living entity, while inhabiting the material bodies he has created for himself by his karma, actually remains uncovered by either gross or subtle matter. This is so because, as the Vedas describe, he is part and parcel of the you, the possessor of all potencies. Having determined this to be the status of the living entity, learned sages become imbued with faith and worship your lotus feet, to which all the Vedas testify and which are beyond birth. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87. 20. Oh, 87. So that must be personified Vedas. Prayers of the personified Vedas. So the living entity, even though he's in the material bodies, covered by the material bodies, gross and subtle, by the impressions that he's, from his previous karmas that therefore produced this particular body, he's still, as the living entity, is not actually covered by the gross or subtle body. He just accepts that I am, so therefore he acts in that capacity. So having this knowledge, then the great sages, then they understand, but it says imbued with faith and worship, become imbued with faith in that. They understand this is there, and then they take up that worship through that association. Then they come to that transcendental position. So this is the point, is that the sages, they're seen as the top of the pile of all the personalities within the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, because from that position, if they're unbiased, then they can see that the position of the Lord and the Jiva and that eternal relationship is there, and that's the natural position, and they can take it up. Otherwise, if they have some bias or contamination by Mayavad or some other thing, then yes, even though their lifestyle and all that's very, very glorious because they're following the Veda, they're very simple, austere, that following all those Brahminical qualities. But as we see is that if they don't take up devotion, it's just a matter of time, they'll be lower than a chandala because from that position they fall. We came into the universe as Lord Brahma. You don't get more pious birth than that in the material world. And here we are. We're not Lord Brahma. And as the Shastras say, we've been through the 8,400,000 species of life. So that means we've been way lower than what those great sages with all the qualities. So you don't get a better Brahman than Lord Brahma. And here we are. So that's the whole point, is that it's just a matter of time, that they will sink down to lower and lower positions in life. Kapila spoke thus. Vritti. In the next Anucheda, bhakti is elucidated through six functional statements, tatparya lingas, both the introductory upakarma and the concluding upasamhara statements highlight the necessity of directing one's meditation towards the Supreme Lord, achieved through the process of bhakti. Bhakti is consistently reiterated, abhyasa, as the abhideya in the verses quoted in the preceding sections. The distinctiveness, apurvata, and the ultimate result, phala, of bhakti are emphasized in Vyasa's Dev's compilation. Additionally, verses praising or promoting it, artavad, and providing reasoning or substantiation, upapatti, are quoted to conclusively establish bhakti as the abhideya, right? So now we've looked at it and shown how by following the different paths and how the paths work and how they bring you, elevate you, that bhakti is the highest of all the paths, and establish that it's the ultimate path, and that, bhakti, that abhideya always remains. Even you get prema, that goal of having attained prema, now it becomes the abhideya, that now you're going to serve Krishna eternally in prema through that application. But now he's taking another approach then of showing how the abhideya is the main point by quoting from the the tatparya lingas from the mimamsa, that the actual point of the hermeneutics is to understand and see how, what is the essence, and so showing through that, because everyone accepts that that's how you understand the essence of the scripture or what's being made, is he's showing that from the Vedas, Vedic literatures, then this is the essence. And so there isn't anything higher. It means anything, any other conclusion is actually a misunderstanding. So it's not that, yes, there are many paths and bhakti is one of them. No, there's only bhakti. And then there's many misunderstandings of it like that, and misapplications or distortions or, you know, complete ignorance where you're applying, you know, doing whatever you're doing because you're a jiva, you know, and having inherent qualities in nature, you act as you should in bhakti, but you're not doing it for bhakti at all. So like Bhaktivinoda Thakur then mentions in the Tattva Vivek, is that in the spiritual world, there's only one opinion, right? So that's why this whole point of opinions, that's not an important thing. In the material world, you have an opinion. It's kind of like, who cares? In the spiritual world, there's one opinion, and that is that pure devotional service to the Lord is the ultimate position, functioning on that platform eternally as the Abhideya in devotion is then what's to be done. Then when you come into the material platform, and then you start to mix all these different things in so many different combinations and permutations, then you get 26 major views of or opinions on, you know, what is the importance of their philosophy and religion. So instead of having one understanding, like in the spiritual world, they have 26 major ones. And then you can take any combination, or you can just keep going, you know, until you get 8,400,000 species, right? Okay. Anucheda 114. In this manner, bhakti is said to be the Abhideya by the six types of proof. Right. So then you want to know is how to establish something. So then there has to be a proof that it is, you know, you say bhakti is this, or what's the proof? One is they've given the logic and the explanation, but now you'll go through and show that there's six specific types. The introductory upakarma and concluding statements, upasamhara, are the same. For instances, the first verse as janmadyasya yadaha as the opening statement, and satyam param timahi as his conclusion. Srimad Bhagavatam 111. The Lord is said to be the most suitable for the meditator. Timahi, since one can meditate on the Lord without difficulty, right? Other things are difficult or on the void, or just worshiping on a form, trying to represent, just the Brahman and nothing, then that's difficult. But yeah, but the Lord is very attractive, very beautiful. And because we worship in devotion, then he reciprocates. Gita says, evam satata yukta, satatam yukta ye bhaktas tvam paryupasate. The devotees constantly thinking of you, worship you, Bhagavad Gita 12.1. Interesting, because he just took the essential points out of the verse, you know, made it like a sutra, like that. Prabhupada does that sometimes. And like that. So you have to know the Sanskrit to be able to put it together and just take the right words, but it still makes sense. And, Bhagavad Gita 12.1. The Supreme Entity. Oh, no, this is a different verse. I'm thinking 10th chapter. That yuktanam. This is yukta ye. Evam satata yukta ye bhaktas tvam paryupasate. Okay. The Supreme Entity is ultimately Bhagavan. Brahmano hi patishtaham. I am the basis of Brahman, Bhagavad Gita 14.7. Bhagavan is the object of meditation because he is the source of the universe. By his omniscience and endowment of all shaktis, janmadyasya yataha. This verse has been explained in Paramatma Sandarbha. The conclusion at the end of the Bhagavatam is stated in the following. Kasmai yena vibhatsito yam atulo jnana pradipapura. The Lord previously revealed the incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.9. This is the same as the meaning in the first verse, explained in Satyam Param Dimahi. I meditate on the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.1. Bhagavan is this, as the subject is clear, since the speaker of Bhagavatam himself testifies. Kasmai yena, right? Okay. And kasmayena is equivalent to the tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye. The Lord imparted this knowledge to the heart of Brahma. So we see is that one, he's showing in the first verse itself, its beginning and end is consistent. Then he's showing that the first verse and what it's stating, and then what's being stated at the very end in the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. And, you know, in the end of the 12th canto, then is also saying the same thing. Right? So they're both in either way. So it's interesting that he's taking that, the first verse, and then it's showing that. And then it also shows because the first three verses can be taken as that introduction. And so then, it will also be consistent there. Abhyasa, repetition. It was illustrated with examples previously. There are also many examples not shown, right? So we saw from so many different places and so many different scriptures that it's being again and again brought up, and even in Bhagavatam, again and again, it's brought up. There are also many, apurvata, uniqueness, and phala, result, are shown in Vyasa's samadhi. Vyasa saw bhakti yoga to the Lord, which effectively destroys jiva's samsara. Learned Vyasa then wrote the Bhagavatam for ignorant people, Srimad Bhagavatam 176. So, means again that point is being repeated, and there's also showing the uniqueness, right? And the follow result. So the uniqueness is how it's through his meditation he saw a unique presentation of it, bringing out some special thing, and how it effectively destroys the jiva's samsara. And then he wrote the Bhagavatam, you know, to give that result of destroying that to the ignorant people. So the fruit, the result is that, as it mentioned before, is that by meditating always on the lotus feet of the Lord, the effect of that is like the thunderbolt then destroying the mountain, you know, of the impressions of karma. The solid mountain of impressions of karma of the living entity. There are many other examples of Artavad, as in the case of Abhyas. There are many examples of Upapatti, reasoning, such as the following. Yeah, Artavad means that, you know, the example of that in the case of Abhyas, how you must practice this. Devotees are doing this. Those who did this, then they get this result. Great, you know, Prahlad Maharaj attained, you know, the association of the Lord and protection by the Lord by meditating on the Lord, and you know, like this. And so he's pointing out that any place where it's talking about the practice and the, you know, of the devotees, then we see is that they get the result of being absorbed in the Lord. Okay, now reasoning. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesatasyad isha apetasya viparyavo smritihi. Tan maya yato buddha abhijetam bhaktiya ka yesham guru devate atma. Okay. For the jiva averse to the Lord, there must be samsara consisting of identifying with body and lack of identity with the soul. Right? So when we say here is on the mundane, it's identity. The identities are always with the body. Well, our identity is with the soul. So you can't say it's okay. Well, if you have these modern isms and philosophies and all these different varieties of thought, then if the identity isn't the main thing, it's the individuality, then why are we emphasizing this identity as servant to the Lord? Because those identities are based on the body. While for us, our identity is based on we're the infinitesimal spiritual spark, part and parcel of the Lord. servant, natural, you know, servant of the Lord. That's the identity. Then as an individual, we apply that in service. Okay, for the soul averse to the Lord, there must be samsara consisting of identity with body and lack of identity with the soul, because of his absorption in the material coverings on the soul, arising from the Lord's maya. Therefore, the intelligent person, taking guru as the Lord and very self, should fully worship the Lord with pure bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.37. Right? Yeah, so then taking guru as the Lord and very self, then should fully worship the Lord with pure bhakti, right? So then yeah, so then Srila Prabhupada explains. No, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. However, the devotee should not fear bondage from samsara. Fear naturally is destroyed for the person who starts bhakti because of the false identity arising from imposition of body and senses, dvitiye. For the jiva averse to the Lord, ishad apetasya, there will be fear or samsara. But there is no fear for the person faithful to the Lord. Right? So the false identity then identifies them with the body and senses, so therefore there will be fear. So when you say fear and you samsara, it's the same thing. So when the devotee is freed from all fear, it means he's freed from all samsara. Right, and to be absorbed in samsara means fear, because then you're because the body being temporary, then there's always a problem of harm or loss, you know, in the temporary nature. Then it's always going to be fearful that something's going to change, and the soul being eternal is unchanging, therefore doesn't like change. Right, variety within a established favorable position, that's all right. But to change that favorable position into something else, that's not good. So that's why we see is that in the spiritual world, you have the favorable position of service to Krishna in one spiritual form, in the spiritual realm with the spiritual associates. And that doesn't change. But within that, there'll be variety of who's interacting and doing what at what times and which ways and which places. That all variety will be there. But it's still on the platform of its eternal position of it not changing, right? That it's always there, and then variety will be on that. So in the same way here is that we have what we consider a favorable identity, and then within that there's some variety that still maintains that identity, then we'll say this is okay. You know, that'll be a pious manifestation. But then the problem with the material piety is then enjoyment. And then we're always afraid of the temper, you know, that favorable position being changed. And so that kind of variety we don't like. And then the variety that comes within that change, then becomes even more disturbing. So one has to see is that, no, it's about identifying as the servant of the Lord. We do that, then everything else comes, because it's a real identity. And real identity, then you can deal in real individuality. But there's no fear for the person faithful to the Lord. Tavad ragad jayas stainas tavat kara gritam griham tavan mohon gri nigado yavad krishna nate janaha. O Krishna, until people become your devotees, Their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.36. Okay. Yeah, so until they become devotees, then all these things are a problem. Say, when they become devotees, then they start engaging their nature in the Lord's service, you know, their home in the Lord's service, the family members and all that in the Lord's service. And so is this breaks the shackles or the bondage of material existence. So there's no fear for them. They're not bound in samsara like that. That fear of samsara takes two forms, the form of reversal and the form of forgetfulness. Reversal means thinking oneself to be the body, different from the soul. Forgetfulness means not remembering that one is soul. Right? So reversal, one thinks that one's the body, you know, different from the soul, and he doesn't even think, and the other is he forgets that he's the soul. So when he forgets he's the soul, then he identifies with the body. Right? So these two forms. So that's why when you take it, I'm not the body, I'm the soul, eternal servant of Krishna, then you remove that fear, that knowledge, you have that knowledge that removes the fear or samsara. So just by that basic principle, you're out of the material world. People say so many things, but that was one of the first things that devotees knew. You're not the body, we're the soul. We're eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We serve him through devotion, and that's expressed in this age through the chanting of the holy name. And the result of that will be developing love of God, and then we'll be elevated to the eternal, you know, to the spiritual world where we'll eternally serve the Lord. Every devotee knew this. And when they would talk to the, you know, guests and other people, they would mention these things. So that's the point, is that the fundaments of the philosophy, those essential points, those are there. They're not just, oh yeah, that's basic and move on. That's the mentality of someone who's using an inductive method or approach. But if you're using deductive, you must know this is essential. This would then applies. If I have that in place, all other details will have meaning. So you never give up the fundaments. While in the and they always remain important. While in the inductive, then the fundaments always become, you know, that's for the children. They learn that. We're doing these higher things. And so because they'll come up to a point and then that's it. Then they strike another point and then speculate it, mix it around, and do different things with it. And try to, you know, come up with some, you know, some taste that's there, but they can never get to the Lord. So that's the thing. So that's why devotees don't prefer using the inductive method. So even when we're preaching, you're connecting to a person's the inductive nature, that they're going from themselves going up, but you're bringing knowledge from down, giving it to them, and then bringing them up to that point. So you're not using the speculative method. You're using the deductive method and bringing them step by step through. Just like if someone's in a well by themselves, they can't get out by their inductive method. You throw the rope down, right? Right? That rope of knowledge, that rope of devotional service, they're holding on to that from their position. It means you have to throw the rope to where they are. You can't throw it above them, right? You know, you throw it to where they are. And then when you pull on that rope, you know, you bring them up. So you're from that, giving that deductive knowledge, pulling them up. So from their point, they're seeing that they're going up. So they may in the beginning thinks it's an inductive thing, but it's not. It's pulling them up from above, not pushing from below. Okay, continuing. A person becomes devoid of questions concerning the past and future, such as, who am I? What should I do? What was I before? What will I be after? This fear arises by the maya of the Lord. It is said, Smriti Bhramshad Bhuti Nasho Bhuti Nashat Pranashyati. From loss of memory, intelligence is lost. From loss of intelligence, one is destroyed. Bhagavad Gita 261, right? So this aspect is that when one becomes covered, then this reversal and forgetfulness comes into place. So you forget, so you don't think of the Lord, you don't identify, you reversal. So they work on reversal, that identity, and they don't think of who am I, why am I there, so therefore then the intelligence is lost, right? They forget about the Lord, they don't ask these questions, and then one falls back down into the material position. Because of this, ataha, the intelligent person, getting his intelligence by the mercy of Guru's lotus feet, should fully, worship, bhajet, the Lord by pure ekaya, bhakti, devoid of other desires, devoid of karma or jnana. This person considers the Guru to be as dear as the Lord and the self. Sardartha Darshini 11.237. Because only by coming in contact with the Guru, then we learn what's going on and who we actually are. Then, you know, we give up that reversal element and we take up remembrance of the Lord. And so then we identify with the servant of the Lord. So always remember, never forget on the material. That's the spiritual platform. That's what Guru gives us. We're on the thing is I'm this body and I'm separate, that's separate from the soul. And so I don't even identify as the soul. I talk about soul. I even talk about body. So even seeing these modern religious systems or contemporary religious systems that I could say the modern. Then they take it that the body is the soul. So they're bringing the body because the body itself is inherently sacred rather than, no, it's by, you know, performance of service to God, then it may be considered sacred. So maybe saintly persons and all that, but your regular person, then you don't just suddenly take it in that way. So they take it the body is important, that even, you know, when they, after the judgment day, the final judgment, you get elevated to, you know, that with your body, that body will go like that, you know, so they don't understand this reincarnation. Otherwise, which body, you know? So so that's why then the importance of worshiping the spiritual master, worshiping the guru, because through him, he's giving all this. So when you have a mission, then the founder Acharya becomes the central. Through him, then you can understand all the teachings of the Acharyas and what's the essence. And then one's guru is connecting you with Prabhupada's teachings and helping you understand and cultivate these teachings of Prabhupada. Therefore, the spiritual master, Prabhupada, the previous Acharyas headed by Rupa Goswami, they all become more as dear as the Lord and the self. So that's the whole thing. And any effort to try to reduce that because of somebody's aversion to authority, they have authority issues or some kind of, you know, social, political, economic philosophy, then this is a great disservice to the community of Vaishnavas. You can show them how to not just be sentimental, but make it practical, have knowledge, and it shouldn't just be sentiment. It should be based in the philosophy. So it's not just you're following the religion, so you're sentimental or even fanatic, but it has to be based in the philosophy. You know why? That brings about the balance. That brings about the maturity. But to say, this is not good, why anybody should worship me more than another so much, so we'll reduce all that, and we're all the same, we're all together, we're all devotees, and, you know, all isn't as great. And that, and these kind of things is a disservice to the Vaishnava community and to the world at large, and even to the universe, because the demigods then, you know, we're not performing Sankirtan Yajna, things don't go as well for them either. So it's a great disservice in the name of one's own personal attachments, you know, and inability to give those up. So as pointed out here is that the guru is very, very important. And so that must be seen, that must be appreciated. And it's because of this, you know, it's because of him giving that knowledge that brings you to Krishna, or at least faith in that. And even if he doesn't know so much, but he has faith that what Prabhupada is saying is 100% gets the disciple or students to read about Prabhupada and what he's saying, you know, from his books and that, and then like this, then he can go. So in this way, that's why it's meant. Even the disciple can become more advanced than the guru, because they're getting that knowledge from the perfect source, and they're having that faith that, yes, I have faith in guru, and guru says you must study this. So then following that faith, with faith, worshiping Krishna, and that they attain all perfection. The same The same intention is expressed in the following. The unfailing cause of perfection from men's austerity, study of the Vedas, performance of sacrifice, chanting of mantras, practicing jnana, and giving charity is defined by the wise as glorifying the qualities of the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.22. Right, so this, I think, the fifth chapter, so that'll be then the discussion with Narad Muni and Vyasadeva on what actually is perfect, right? Because the men's austerity, study of the Vedas, performance of sacrifice, chanting mantras, practicing jnana, giving in charity, like that he's been all nicely described in the Mahabharata, but Vyasadeva isn't satisfied. And so Why not? Because he didn't bring out this is defined by why the wise is glorifying the qualities of the Lord. That's the perfection of these. So he's showing that these things are good to do. The devotee uses these and this and that. He gets too caught up in that and not showing that, well, actually, it's a devotion to the Lord. Naturally, you use all those qualities. You see, the Pandavas are fully absorbed in the Lord and they're following all these nice things. But these are just the natural activities of someone who is on the platform of service to the Lord, because that pure bhakti or that daiva varnashram, that is something that all devotees in that can follow like that. You know, the idea is that, oh, we're from this locale, we can only do this. But then if we're everybody's from this locale, we're Westerns, we can only do this. Why is the standard being set from Southern California? Nowhere else in America do they consider that a standard. Literally, you know, unless, of course, Southern California has now have moved to Arizona and to Texas and other places. So then they start to influence those places. But otherwise, as far as it goes, but then they'll start identifying with that place. So it's that then you should make it that each locale and each thing. So then someone from London would behave like this and someone from Scornthorpe would behave like that. Someone from Wales like this, Scotland that, Denmark this, you know, Brazil that, and, you know, so then each one would have their completely different, and there wouldn't be this one world unifying thing that we're all Westerners when, no, we're not. So that's not how it works. So we have to see is that we have to get beyond these fallible soldiers of attachment to, you know, the mind and intelligence and senses on the external platform of identifying with the body. And appreciate that, no, it has to be in line with Krishna. That means all good qualities, all good pious activities are all the perfections in connection with the Lord. So to claim that we're Westerners and all that and not be even connecting to austerity, study of Vedas, performances, sacrifice, chanting and mantras, practicing beyond giving and charity, and then leaving that, then what are you left with? So they don't even have religion. And then we're saying, yes, we're of the religion that we have no religion. So we do nothing in the religion. And this was, we're just as good as everyone else. In fact, we'll get a better result because we're honest. You're not honest, because honest means you understand you're the soul. Eternal soul of Krishna. It's very dishonest. Then from another quote, oh, sage, your friend at Vedavyas, desiring to describe the qualities of the Lord, wrote Mahabharata. In that work, he attracted men's attention to topics of the Lord through topics about material happiness. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.5.12, right? So the meaning is clear. It means that Vidura spoke thus, right? So he did that attracted by material, get material happiness. But the point is by doing that, it's supposed to be going to the Lord, it's said here. So, but it wasn't made clear. People read Mahabharata and they don't think that that's the conclusion. So therefore, then he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam to make it very clear. Then it becomes very nice. Yeah, how are we doing? Oh, 5 more minutes. Okay. Right. So all these religious activities have to culminate in devotional service. So all activities of karma and jnana must culminate in devotional service. So therefore, taking up directly devotional service, that's something all souls can do. While taking up the path of karma and jnana, yes, if you're not Indian, basically it won't be easy to do, you know, practically impossible. So saying we're Westerners, we can't do that. But that's not our recommendation. We're not saying become Indian. We're saying take up pure devotional service supported by Daiva Varnashram as recommended by the Lord and the devotees. That's what we're saying. So interpreting that as mundane and then taking it into these other things and then becoming Hindus themselves by worshiping demigods and this and that, then complete mishmash, complete waste of people's time, complete waste of human effort and energy. Vidura spoke thus. Riti, in the next anucheda, bhakti is elucidated as the abhideya, characterized as a limb of prema. The confidential essence, rahasya, revealed in the chatushloki. The practice of bhakti at all times and places is underscored, incorporating verses that outline both affirmative and negative statements. It is shown that the performance of bhakti is emphasized in all scriptures, by all agents, in all places, with all senses, utilizing all objects, in all actions, during all religious rites, and with all outcomes. Sarvatra sarvada, right? So that's that fourth verse of the chapter shloki. You know, that's the essence, the rahasya, right? So this here is an interesting here. Bhakti looks at it as the abhideya. It's a limb of prema, right? Because from the abhideya, then you get prayojana. So they're very closely connected, right? That's based on the field of the sambandhigyan. And so then, but they're very closely connected. And so therefore bhakti is the abhideya. It's always done in devotion. You know, but the point is this. So bhakti on its own isn't the goal. Prema is the goal. But at the same time as prema being the goal, is its goal is to always be engaged on that platform of love in bhakti. Right? So therefore, that's the amazing thing is through bhakti, you get prema. And then what will you do? Continue bhakti, but now from the level of prema. Because before we're performing bhakti from lower levels, from the neophyte, then the madhyam, then the uttama platform, then in the uttama platform, then we're functioning in the, you know, the preliminary stage by, you know, trying to understand and appreciate our position and relationship with the Lord. Then we come to the intermediate stage. We're able to function in that relationship in our spiritual form with the associates of the devotee. And then we come to the point where then we come to as an uttama to the platform of prema. And then from that platform, we continue the processes. So that's the thing. That's why it says bhakti is the process. Bhakti is the goal, right? Because from the process, you get the goal, and having gotten the goal, it will still remain as the process. Means, you know, as the abhideya. So that's the wonderfulness of the whole system that we've been given, is that nothing is extra. Everything that is there, one goes into the other, and it always remains. It's a very, very perfect. That's the sophistication of the Vedic system that others cannot appreciate or comprehend, right? Is that nothing is extra. It's all perfectly there. And so all these elements perfectly go together in their use, while in the modern, you're always going through and you're getting rid of things. Like once you've studied, you know, your third grade, you know, math book, when you go to the fourth grade, you don't refer to that anymore. Now you refer to that and keep going, and everything's dropped off. But they don't understand the principles are always there. And so always relating, that makes the system so much easier. But that's the point, is that the material world, people want to think it's difficult and complicated, because then they can feel my identity is more special than another. I went through more difficulty to get to where I am. Well, if you deal with the essence of that, and it's always functioning on that, then it seems so easy and everybody could do it. So what's my specialness? It's I'm the PhD. What's my special position? I've done so much. You know, why aren't I distinct? So it's distinction, adoration, and profit. So it's nothing to do with devotional service. So we have to be very careful not to be distracted by these tricks of Maya. Jai. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.